listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut, but homicide looking at me for the face down, with Mac 11 even boom from the base down, scheming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in the twilight, where pretty pussy your vigilance is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy, tell them all to come and get me, give me everything I sold, so my karma come in heaven, and no preliminary hearing for my record, so my record, then my motherfucking gang sign stands silent for the record, tell the world I know it's too late. Boys or girls, I think I gone crazy. Down inside my vices all day. Won't you please believe when I say, wouldn't you know? Hey, welcome to the Blackout Test Podcast. Your host, Rod and
Karen.
You all right over there?
Yeah, sorry.
You sure?
Yes.
All right. We are live on...
No, I'm sorry. I was looking at the browser and I was like, did I use the right browser?
Oh, maybe that's why I went to the other thing. I don't know, Karen. It looks good to me. I don't know.
Okay.
We're live on a Monday. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Podomatic. Search the Blackout Tips. Leave us 5-star reviews. The official weapon of the show is
the taser,
and the unofficial sport
is bullet ball.
And bullet ball extreme. And today's podcast is sponsored. Mm-hmm. It is sponsored. That's right, guys.
It's sponsored by somebody.
Sponsored by a very sexy sponsor, AdamandEve.com. It's time to spice it on up, y'all. Okay, they're gonna be calling y'all the Spice Girls. It's gonna be so spicy this summer. Summer spice, I say. They want you to spice. Adam and Eve trying to spice you up in the bedroom, okay? They are trying to get your bedroom popping. Flavorful, zesty even. What they're trying to do is give you 50% off of one item when you go to AdamandEve.com. All you gotta do, just load up on an item, and you'll be dropping loads. Just go to AdamandEve.com, pick any one item. It could be a sexy new piece of lingerie. It could be some handcuffs. It could be anything. You guys pick. But you go ahead and get that. And then on top of the one item, they're going to give you free stuff. What kind of free stuff? 10 tantalizing free gifts. I'm talking sexy items for all of y'all. One for him, something for her. And a third item you'll both enjoy.
Yeah, him, her, them.
They, them. I say you mix it up. Don't let Adam and Eve tell you what to do.
Mm-mm.
Once you own it, it's yours to put it on whatever you want, okay? Everything likes being vibrated from what I hear.
From what I hear too.
But yeah, go ahead and do that. And then they'll also give you 6 free spicy movies and free shipping. That's TBGWT offer code when you go check out at AdamandEve.com. That's all you gotta do to get all this free shit. TBGWT at AdamandEve.com. Get your free item half off. Get your free shipping. Get your 6 spicy movies. Get your free gifts. That's what I'm talking about. All right, let's get into the show. There's all kinds of stuff happening on the show. I don't even know where to start, to be honest with you. We did watch some stuff over the weekend.
We did.
So I think the first thing that everybody will be happy to hear that we watched was Beyonce's brand new Netflix special. We didn't get a chance to watch it on Wednesday when it came out.
We've been busy.
As you guys have probably noticed, we have been very busy. So we knew we would probably get to watch it this weekend. Shout out to Chris. We were on movietrailerreviews.net podcast, then Sandy checked.
Mm-hmm.
So that's out. We didn't get to watch it Saturday because of that. And then we woke up Sunday morning and got information.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess.
I do wonder what we could possibly say that has not been said by everybody already. You know, to be honest with you, I mean, we watched it a little later than everybody,
right?
Which is funny because Beyonce, so like 5 days, and I don't know what we're gonna say that's any different from what the fuck y'all heard other places. But it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm.
Karen, I know you said you had wanted to talk about this, so I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I do. I actually was, I stayed up and watched Coachella that she did last year, and because I'm on the East Coast, that shit didn't start to like ridiculous 1-2 in the morning or some shit like that, so I was up half the night. I took a nap. And when you watch it through Coachella, you got one experience, but and with the Coachella, you only seen the first show, you didn't see the second show. And so for me to watch it again with different camera angles and things like that, it just gave it a whole different experience.
Oh yeah. I have a lot to say, but I just don't want to step on your toes, and I don't want to
go ahead.
Oh, hold on, my mic, something's going on my mic. Okay, I fixed it. I have a lot to say, but I won't step on your toes with it. And I want you to be able to get all your things out as a black woman.
You know I'll stop you and chime in.
Okay. All right. So, of course, the first thing that stuck out to me is the same thing that always sticks out whenever she does just about anything, is this woman is a marketing genius.
Yes, she is.
I don't think people really understand how epic it is that she went to Coachella, and she could have, and I think in an alternate universe where this happened on Earth 2 or whatever, they're still just as happy as us, but she could have just went there and gave us like her Formation World Tour performance and being just fine. No one would have been mad. No one would have felt shortchanged. No one would have felt they owed anything. They would have said, yeah, okay. Like it's Beyonce, she's been doing an elaborate show, she's been touring, she just coming off a pregnancy, cool, I'm just glad she came to Coachella, you know. But she didn't do that, did she? She is the first black woman to ever headline it, and none of us knew about all this extra shit. We knew she was going to perform. I don't know what the fucking NDAs are. I don't know if it's wizardry. I don't.
Oh yeah, if you're around her, you can't say nothing.
I don't know if it's the same sorcerer that puts the spell of levitation on her hair during the shows.
Come on.
I don't know who is, like, are they selling these things in blood? We didn't know. There's not just Netflix special, right? We didn't know that. We didn't know that there was an album. Like, we didn't even know any of this shit. And so you get the documentary and you get the album. And supposedly it's a three thing deal with Beyonce for Netflix for $60 million.
Because she was gonna do HBO, and Netflix was like, oops, we got her, we got no, excuse me.
She made Netflix work for her. I'm not Netflix. She made Coachella work for her in a way that I just don't think people understand. Like, you got to think about this. Dozens of people, if not more at this point, maybe it's hundreds, I don't know about that much about Coachella, but all these people have graced the stage before her. Headliners have headlined before her. Nobody made it work for them like this. I don't even know what the deal is with Coachella and what other stars negotiated, as far, not money wise, but as far as having the right to take your show and then monetize it for yourself other places. Like, I'm sure at most festivals like Coachella, they would be like, well, that performance happened here, we own that. You know what I mean? But whatever she signed, she's like, no, then I'm gonna sell this shit for me, and then I'm gonna make a documentary for me, and then I'm gonna put it out for me and get paid for that shit.
Right. And it's actually still a big ass promotion for you.
Right. So that's the first thing I would notice, is just that she went to Coachella, was bigger than Coachella, and made Coachella do the work for her. Like, you know, I think what's funny is her performance initially was so memorable. As I was watching the special, I was like, I know which song coming next. I know when she said, ain't that about a bitch. It's just, you know, like, you just notice certain shit, like, at least from the one performance you saw on YouTube. The other thing, Coachella, she made it so that, hey, look, one weekend, everybody gets to see my performance free. Right? But she did two performances. Mm-hmm. And some people saw the second one, some didn't. I heard it was on YouTube, if you saw it live, maybe. Whatever. I heard also it wasn't on there, but people found a way. Whatever that was, the two different performances, which other people have done, Outkast did it, right? We woke up late in the morning and saw that shit, right? Early in the morning. She thought of a way to seamlessly edit those two performances together to give you a dynamic, like, it felt like a magic show. For the the editing has to be up for some sort of award. I don't know. Right.
And you know what? I was watching it and I was like, she edited this shit better than some fucking movies.
Right.
Like, we watch movies and I've never seen it just that flawlessly. Cause at first I was like, okay, does she have a ninjutsu for color? Because it was like pink, yellow, pink, yellow, pink, yellow. And the way it was changing, the movements were actually still flowing. So I thought at first, okay, I know she did two shows, but am I losing it? Oh, she's going back and forth between the shows.
Right. And I can see this is going to be one of those segments where I didn't think I had a lot to say, but I have a lot to say.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah. And like I said, I will jump in kind of between it. But one thing I also want to say about you talking about how she changed Coachella, she brought her own background. She was like, we're gonna use this state, like, I this right here, we're gonna use this. And then not only that, Coachella kept it, and now it's like a monument and people can go take pictures of it with it this year.
Are you talking about the bleachers?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know who built them bleachers. I don't know if it was made by the same person that made Thor's axe in fucking
come on
Infinity War, because them bleachers are strong as fuck. And I went to a HBCU. Like, our bleachers give a bit. Them bleachers was out there working, okay? No giving. Mm-hmm. But what I was gonna say is, it was obviously an ordeal. Like, mm-hmm. she even said she won't be doing this again. It's coming off of the birth of her twins. Obviously being a mother to Blue, being a wife, being a pop star, tour artist, business mogul, all this shit. She's like, I think she even said in the documentary, I'm not doing this again. Like, this is the hardest I ever pushed myself. This is the hardest, like, I'm not gonna do this twice. So this is the thing where we weren't expecting her to do this, but she practiced apparently for almost a year to get not just in shape, but to get the show perfect.
Yes. And also, she was actually preparing for Coachella while she was actually touring for her other. She was actually touring and doing this at the same time.
Right. Keep in mind, she don't have, I think I can't stress enough what I said in the beginning. She didn't have to do any of this shit. Mm-mm. She could have just done her formation tour performance there and everyone would be fine. No one would be mad. Everybody would be like, that was fucking great. It's Beyonce. She just decided, I'm going to give this shit the effort that it, of just like the concert of a lifetime. And so, in addition to, you know, just the fact that, you know, it's the planning, the meticulousness of organizing 200 people on stage at the same time.
I didn't realize that many people.
Right. Can we talk about the HBCU aesthetic though?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like what always gets, we're both HBCU grads.
Yes.
What always gets lost in this fucking like PWI HBCU shit that goes on online. What always gets lost in all this stuff, because everyone's trying to be pejorative to each other, is that there is something uniquely Black American about the HBCU culture.
Agreed.
About the Black Greek fraternities, but still, it's something uniquely American about that here. This is not to shit on anyone else's experiences,
mm-mm.
but it is a Black iconic experience that is originated here as far as like, the things that we do, the education that we have, you know, HBCUs obviously are a testament to resistance. They're obviously a testament to education. There's mm-hmm. storied history there. There's all kinds of, you know, it was like a subversive way to educate Black folks. And so we have created our own ways, our own lanes, our own like culture there. And for her, a person that didn't go to college, but I remember when she toured and came to Fayetteville State when she was in Destiny's Child.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, so she's always looked up to HBCUs. Her father graduated from one. So to see somebody that is the biggest pop star in the world, bar none, and a Black woman from Houston, be so like adamantly like Black, in Black American, like so adamantly, like I am Black, I am from America. I am from Houston, Texas. I am from the South. Like she said at the end, if my country ass can do it, then anybody can.
Come on.
That is so powerful, because we have been taught, and just the general consensus has always been, you get to be as big as someone like Beyonce. You don't get big by being specific to blackness. Mm-mm. You can be big and black. You can be the biggest act and be a black person. But what you can't be is a biggest act that is for black people. And even more specifically for her, for black women. Like, you risk that, that's just not allowed. You're not supposed to be able to do that. You're supposed to be like, let me shrink myself. Let me say white people are great. Let me say black people are great. Let me say, you know, hey, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. It's feminism. It's just all women. And for her to be somebody that's like, no, it's, I said black. That's amazing. Another thing I fucking loved about this thing. We get to hear her in our own words.
Correct.
She doesn't do a lot of media. She doesn't do a lot of interviews.
Mm-mm.
So people often pejoratively, and I think low-key offensively, attribute her creativity and her genius to other people around her.
Yes.
No one likes to just say, this is her concept. She came up with this. She coordinated this. She made this happen. It's always got to be someone else in the wings. When it, when she was younger, it was her father. Everybody wanted to give her father all the props for the creative genius, blah, blah, blah. People started giving it to Jay-Z. People were giving it to Solange. This isn't offensive to any of them. Like, this isn't saying they're not creative, but why are we giving Beyonce's things to other people all the time? Right? It's always gotta be something about the fact that she just can't come up with this herself. You know, her, even when she becomes more older and outspoken about her politics and her music and stuff, it's somehow just, oh no, that's just marketing, or it's not real, she just widened away. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know if you guys have noticed in this country, but the pro-black shit is not as cool as it was just even when Obama was here.
Come on.
Some of your fave activists and shit is not out in these streets like they was, because ain't nobody trying to get killed over this bullshit. They understand the environment that we're in. Everybody seen the referendum that was the election. And I'm not saying referendum in that this motherfucker destroyed Hillary Clinton. No, I'm mm-hmm. just saying the fact that racist people have been emboldened. Hate crimes have been emboldened.
Come on now.
Hate is no longer a thing that people are doing quietly indoors. This is a thing that is loud and proud and out. And to see somebody like Beyonce go, yeah, this is not a marketing thing. I wasn't saying I was black because it's cool. I wasn't saying I'm a feminist because this is the wave. It's because I am one. And to see her say it in her own words, to see her use quotes from, you know, Maya Angelou, from Toni Morrison, like, these are the things, these are creative choices she made. To see her in those meetings coordinating this stuff, like, these are the things that I think we don't often see. And I think it's also why she fucking records all these moments of her life and her work, so that she can tell you this shit herself. Because anytime you let somebody else do it, they're telling your story. And when you let somebody else tell your story, man, it's just, we've seen what can happen.
Yes.
And to see her, like, struggling, like, talking about her pregnancy and the high blood pressure, and then she named two things I had never even heard of, that I was like, oh no, Beyonce got that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when you're pregnant, there are some kind of diseases and infections and stuff that kind of only happen during pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. So, to see her bring that up, because it humanizes her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I hear people talk about her, and this is the thing white people are doing now. And who knows what they'll say after homecoming, but it's this thing where they're doing the, like, how do we take shots at Beyonce? Like, it was cool for white people to like her, and it was like, I'm woke, I'm cool, I still like Beyonce, even though she did the self-titled album, even though she did Lemonade, and she's doing Formation. Hey guys, I'm a cool, woke, liberal white person, I still fuck with her. But I had noticed that shit was starting to slide. You know, I listen to podcasts and shit, and they started to be awesome, like, kind of fuck her though, right? And which is them being honest, they were already feeling that way, but it right. was not, it wasn't cool during, like, the come up to Trump to be on some, like, but kind of fuck this black woman shit, right?
Right.
So they kind of was sliding back into that. And then Homecoming comes out. It's going to be interesting to see what the reaction is to it, because it's such a big reminder of, I'm a black woman, I'm telling my own story. And this is why I tell my own story, because I can't trust you to tell it. I can't trust you to tell people what I think. I can't trust your interviews to be asking the right questions. Let me just fucking tell you how I feel about being black, how I feel about HBCUs, how I feel about being a black woman and everything I do being for black women, how I feel about my being a mother, how I feel about being a wife. Like, I appreciate that she's able to do that and then turn it into her money.
Correct, because it's one of those things where, not trying to be funny, when Beyonce kept a blank slate, what I mean, she was just, I'm here to perform, and I'm not gonna say her music was racially not racial, it was just, come on everybody.
Yeah, it was, well, it was women,
right?
It was single ladies, you know, it was like always black. That was never a doubt.
It was always black,
but it was also kind of like the traditional, like, I'm black but I'm making music that if you're white, there's no reason to feel uncomfortable, you know. And then there's this Houston part of her that just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and now she's cussing and now she's rapping,
right? Because it was a period of time where you never heard Beyonce cuss,
right? Now she's talking about she likes her Negro nose, not just, you know what I mean, like, it's becoming a certain type of like aesthetic that's dripping off of it. And then the HBCU, like, that is the biggest love, because keep in mind, just like the hashtag Dumb Thrones, it's not kicking nobody out,
right?
You can, white people can go to HBCUs.
Yes, they can. They get a minority scholarship when they go.
If you think you're above that, or you think that somehow it's a lesser institution, so that's why you don't go,
right?
Then that's kind of on you, because white people won't even apply or know anything about an HBCU and be like, well, I mean, you go to school without white people. That's not true. Plenty of white people was in my classes.
Come on now.
Y'all just weren't in the majority. I guess now you know how it feels. I don't know. But the point being, you had this experience that is such a black experience. Like, and other artists have tried to do it, but I think they've just done it with different stuff.
Right.
Like Church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kendrick does it with Africa. And many artists have done it with Africa, many black people. Now, I'm not knocking that. Mm-mm. I need that to be explicitly clear. I'm not knocking people that do it when they're from the islands, right? But that's not black America.
Right.
This, like, HBCUs is black America. It's a singular type of institution that can't exist another place, right? Because it is created in the outcome of, like, Plessy versus Ferguson. Like, it's not.
Come on.
It's not. It can't be created in England. It can't be created in a country that had slavery but is mostly black. Like, it had to be America that made this. And so this is a homage to America in a way that other artists have not done yet. You know, this isn't to say they had no elements of it, but she didn't, like, mock it as Kanye did it in College Dropout.
Right.
Like she leaned into it and said, this is a source of pride, you know, to see her talk about how important HBCUs to institutions are at the end, to put that quote in there. Like, it was for us, which is one of the reasons I don't really get mad when white people don't know it. Like, when, oh, she's this, she's that. Fuck you. It's for us anyway. We weren't waiting on you to approve.
Right. I know it's a surprise. You to join in.
Yeah, I know it's a big surprise to you. We were not sitting around like, I hope they approve of this Beyonce thing that was written specifically for black women. I hope you come around to this blackness. Like, we're good.
Yeah, we were doing this before y'all even paid this shit any attention.
Netflix pays you before you see the shit. So, she got the money.
Right.
And we're gonna watch it 57 times each. Probably all from the same account, but that's fine. That's fine. Nobody can stop it.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, she killed that shit, and I was so, like, blown away by that. And then you get the performance. This nigga held the mic the entire time. She never even went with the Janet Jackson, like, shout out to Firestarter. I think they called it, like, the drive-through headset or the Burger King headset. Like,
yes!
She didn't even use that joint. She just straight up, like, held that mic for 2 hours. Like, what the fuck? And when you look at all the dancing and acrobatic ass shit and all the coordination, and she's, like, in and out, outfit change, boom, right back in your face with this mic again. Like, ballad, boom, Negro spiritual, boom.
She was like an athlete, and I think sometimes people underestimate.
Not like, is.
Well, she is an athlete, actually. Mm-hmm. When you, and when I said like an athlete, the reason why I was saying like athletes, because she keeps her body in good tip-top shape.
Right.
And to be able to do the things she does, moving, squatting, bending, humping the bleachers, dipping, shaking her ass, and all that stuff and still singing, mm-hmm. and you don't hear no breathiness,
right?
You didn't hear no in her voice.
Well, she would have been like entitled to,
correct?
If she would say, y'all, I need a minute, we would have understood. But she's just straight up flawless.
At first I was like, did she even take a water break?
Right. I think, what did she say, she weighed 218 pounds or something like that with the twins?
Mm-hmm.
Like 218 pounds. And then she started this, and I love the behind the scenes where you see like her starting and it's awkward. She talks about people don't like rehearsing because you're gonna look bad, you're gonna fuck up, you're gonna, you know. And she's showing us, I'm sure, like the fuck ups that she's comfortable with us seeing. It's mm-hmm. not like a 24/7 cam of her just fucking up, but like, you know, like the dedication, because you see her body look different than Beyonce's body.
Correct.
Like, and not that she wasn't still fine as hell.
Come on.
I mean, but still, you see her body being, and you're like, oh, she had 8 months to go from that back to Beyonce shape. Tip top shape. You know, and her talking about that diet, it was like no sugar, no carbs, no meat, no fish, no something else. I tried the diet, y'all. I did. Thursday, I heard about the diet in the article on Thursday, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna do this diet.
Oh no, that ain't no joke.
And then I had a coffee, and I realized as I sipped on my coffee, I failed the diet. I was like, oh damn, oh, that was quick. Grand opening, grand closing, that's all I'm saying. But
and I felt that, I'm hungry. I was like, yes honey.
Yeah. And so it was just dope to see her like accomplish all this stuff. The blackness of the people that were working with her, the band, the dancers, the choreographers, even the guitarist for Jack White's part was a black woman. Like the intentionality of her blackness is so like meticulous. Like the dedication to that part is the part that always blows me away, because I keep thinking my whole life, how the greatest pop performers that were black always felt like they couldn't be too black. You know what I mean? And this is not shade to them. I get why they felt that way. It was conventional wisdom. Don't be too black. You know, people love Whitney Houston. I remember Whitney Houston, and I remember being shocked she fucked with Bobby Brown, because my whole life, Whitney Houston had existed in a place where I was like, she is quote unquote transcendent race, as they like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is, you know, like, Beyonce is not just talking about blackness in her music, but in this creative outlet of that is this homecoming documentary, she's like black, blackity black, black in your black ass face, black. Boom. You know what I mean? Michael Jackson. You know, people talk about like one song, Black or White. He had one song, and we late in his career and during his pedophile scandals, and we were like, oh yeah, Black or White, he's a black man. See guys? Like that took a while. This is not to say we ever question, is he a black person? It's just the fact that conventional wisdom said you just don't do that in mixed company. Why would you ever limit, quote unquote, your career by being like, I'm black? Now what these white folks gonna think? Right? That was the whole thing. And to see them be like, nah, to see Beyonce be like, nah, I'm black. I'm black as fuck. Y'all still coming to my concerts. Y'all still gonna be bumping my music. Y'all gonna be mad, but I ain't doing nothing to hurt you. I'm just black. Like, it's not like she's out there saying anything like fuck white people or some shit. Like, she's just black. She's just leaning into and celebrating being a black woman on this earth from America. And yeah, it was amazing to see that. Because it was just, I don't know, I just could, like, she's always ahead of everyone.
Yeah, she is,
because nobody else has done this. Now imagine, right? People will start trying to do shit like this, you know, but let's be honest, the amount of work we just saw her put into it, ain't nobody gonna do that.
No
but maybe they'll do something like, oh, Coachella Live, my album and documentary. It just won't be this shit.
Mm-mm. and you, to get to the place that she is, all jokes aside, you got to be a workaholic, because she actually was like, I gotta go home to my kids. And she was like, I'm used to rehearsing like 15 hour days, but now I have to go home to my children. 15 hour rehearsals, y'all. It's 24 hours a day, right? 15 hour rehearsals. You know, for me personally, I really appreciate her filming the meetings. And I know everybody laughed when Jay-Z just kind of spoke and was like, okay, y'all heard my wife, basically.
I think that was on their anniversary too,
right? And they was like, happy anniversary. I was like, yeah, like
yeah, she's working like, on her anniversary.
Like, she is actually putting it in. And I like the fact that she was a woman, a black woman in charge, and you have to listen to her. Like you don't have another option. You have to listen to her. And she was given direction, and she told you what she wanted, what she didn't want, what she wanted you to improve on, to let her know what she had to do, because she was tired of all these fuck ass meetings. Like, let's ship this up so I can be at home doing other shit. You know, she did it nicer than that. But, I felt that in my spirit. And it was one of those things for me. I'm like, she's a reflection of that you could be black and be a boss and people have to listen to you. You know, you can be in control. You can, do these things and be a black woman. And I really appreciate the black woman thing, because when it comes to black men, you quote unquote get respect in places and areas where black men didn't. Because if it was a black man that did this exact same documentary, a lot of people that would be shitting on Beyonce would be nothing but praises and clapping and clapping and rah 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 rah. Why? Because it was a man. So when you have a woman that's like, we gonna do it like this, we gonna do it like this, I want to have a certain experience for the people because we're filming this, put microphones wherever you got to put microphones, this is what I want, and I'm going to demand perfection. And I just really appreciate you getting a glimpse into how her mind ticks.
Yeah. And then let's talk about the music, because the seamless transitions and flow was so fucking good, and it was such a celebration of like black shit where they're just mixing like hits that black people fuck with into her music.
Mm-hmm.
I think my favorite joint was what she did, the Diva version of that had everybody mad in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fucking horns on that shit. Like, she was good right there. She could have stopped right there. She didn't need to go any further. It's like, oh, what a dope version. But when they flip it to everybody mad. Too much money. Everybody mad. Same old nigga from the block. Listen, when that shit came in, it's like everything was turning into a party. It's like so much.
It's crunk, so much energy.
So much crunk energy. So much like Houston. So much like down south. So much New Orleans. Like, so much of the just black halftime performance from the bands. Like,
come on, y'all know how we do. Football, basketball, volleyball, swimming, we don't give a damn. The band gonna be there and we gonna be partying.
Yeah, like, I don't remember the end of any Fayetteville State football game.
Mm-mm.
Cause I don't think I'll ever stay for one.
Nope.
But I have seen so many halftime
shows.
Like, I have seen so much Earth, Wind, and Fire performed. Okay?
Come on. Welcome to Fayetteville, North Carolina, your marching Broncos.
Yeah.
What, nigga?
Like, I have seen enough, I've heard enough Earth, Wind, and Fire. I've eaten enough, fish filet sandwiches.
Come on, white bread.
Mustard. Okay. Like, I've done that enough.
Slaw beans.
To be like, okay, now for a nap. Okay, this was cool. I hope the boys win.
Yeah, you better not be picky because all the fish gonna be fried. All the chicken gonna be fried. If you special or on a vegan diet, this ain't for you.
Ain't no vegan options. Okay?
Them niggas gonna be like, what the fuck? No.
Yeah, ain't no gluten-free options, okay?
Mm-mm. No gluten-free. Everything is fattity, fat, fat, fat.
But yeah, to be able to see like that kind of get the reverence that it has within the culture. And honestly, man, like Beyonce's such a game changer. I haven't seen nobody shitting on HBCU since this shit dropped. And y'all know how contrarian ass Twitter love to shit on HBCUs. Like, it's gotta be like, I'm not like those Negroes type of like energy. Like, people have been so proud of like the establishment, whether they went or not. I've seen people talk about how like, yo, I'm gonna make sure my kids know they can go to HBCU. And that's that influence that people have with that platform. Like, Beyonce is such a big deal that people could feel that pride in it, because I think too often we get bogged down in all the other shit, right you know. I mean, y'all remember the episode I talked about them going to talk to Trump, and I'm still emotional about that shit, like, just, but I knew they had to do it,
right?
Because that's how fucked up it is. I hope people like give to HBCUs. I know she did, but I hope other people do as well. I hope they're inspired to understand that these institutions, they will go away, especially under Trump, if we do nothing. Like, it was already kind of, I mean, you guys, I know y'all have heard the article, seen the article about the white people that are shitting, letting their dog shit on the yard of the campus of Howard.
Right.
And then they interviewed one of the white dudes, and he was on some, basically like, if you don't like it, move out the city.
Bitch, this university was here way before you. You right. Wouldn't do it at Harvard.
Right, so, you know, even if you would, man, that's some white people shit. That's not, don't do that shit. Not on our stuff. Take your dog somewhere else. But that's the whole point, is like, that attitude towards our shit exists. And if we embrace that attitude too, it'll be gone, man. It could be gone just like that. Bessie DeVos, Donald Trump, they're not trying to give them people enough money to run their universities.
Mm-mm.
You know, so I hope it encourages people to, if you didn't go to a HBCU, Google HBCU near me, find one, throw them a couple dollars, man. I'm not talking about you gotta like go in there and write them $1 million check, but I mean, you know, do a little something for your folk, because it's kids that's going there right now. It's kids that don't get a chance that go there, you know, that wouldn't have graduated in a white university, because you don't have the support system from white universities. Many times the social cost of being black in a white space, many black people who have gone to PWIs will tell you about it, you know, which is why I never understood the battle between PWIs and HBCUs, because it's like, man, we struggling wherever we go. All HBCU is doing is trying to reduce the social struggle just a little bit. You're still gonna be an individual. There's still like good and bad at the HBCU. There's still other social struggles you'll be taking on, but you know, first time away from home, some institutes are more religious than others. There's a lot of stuff, you know, the money struggles that universities have and stuff. So like, this is not to knock and say like HBCUs are perfect. No, it's just to say like they deserve a place. There's so many black intellectuals that people respect that came right out of those fucking schools.
Right.
Right out of those schools, and then people turn around and shit on them. I'm like, well, where would we be? You know, if we didn't have A&T, where would we be? How many black brilliant minds came right on out of that door, and then you shit on that door? So anyway, all that to say, man, I really appreciate it. Just everything she did, because it just felt like she was speaking for people. And then obviously musically, sonically, throwing in that band behind everything. Freedom took on a whole new, Freedom sound like a motherfucking actual, like a Freedom song.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Freedom for me now is up there with All Right. Like when you had to hear them horns on Freedom and the dancing and then the choir singing along with it, like Kendrick's not even there, and it's just like sonically elevated to such another level than it even sounded to me on the album. Where I'm like, yeah, Freedom now is like the song where I'm like, put this in your trailer for your black movies now. you know what I mean? Like, let's just go ahead and start chopping up them trailers and throwing Freedom in the hook at the end where you get to the conclusion of the whatever the conflict is, and now I'll be going to see your movie. Okay, it doesn't matter what it's about. Let's just show us, put Freedom underneath it, and said I got five on it. I'm going to see it too, two times, three times. Like, it's that fucking dope. And I just respect her journey so much, because to see her blossom fully into her overt pro-black self, that has been, I've appreciated that so much. Like, I'm not a person that was in the Hive before, like when B-Day was out and Destiny's Child and stuff. It was always like, oh, that's cool. And I understood and respected, like, oh, that's black girls' music. That's black women's music. My wife loves that music. No, not really for me. And that's dope. You know what I mean? Cause I'm not a person that's pejorative with, like, it's black women's music. Really? Y'all need y'all own? I'm like, nah, it's dope, man.
Come on. And the thing is, we kind of talked about this before, but people kill me with that. A lot of times, just let women be happy. And I think sometimes that's a very hard concept for men to understand at times. If your wife loves some shit, let her love the fuck out of it and give it to her and right. Let her enjoy it. Because you know what? When she happy, you get the fuck. What about that? Don't dudes understand?
And not even just sex, but just like, why would you want somebody not to be happy? Not even just your wife or your girl, but I see dudes do that shit on Facebook, Twitter, social media all the time, where it's like, how can I tease these women about the thing that they're into that I'm not?
Right, just let her be happy.
Like, they got that band BTS now that a lot of people are into, and I've seen dudes go out of their way to shit on it. It's like, why? Like, what do you gain by shitting on? You clearly don't listen to or care about this shit.
Right.
You clearly see people getting their whole entire motherfucking lives to it. Why would you need to be shady about it to them? You need their attention that bad? You'll even take negative attention?
Mm-hmm, that's what it is. And I think sometimes people have an unhappiness within them, so they like, if I'm not happy, you're not happy, but it doesn't make any sense,
right?
Because, you know, particularly in a straight relationship, so a woman is just supposed to, everything is supposed to cater towards a man. But
well, it's interesting because I'm saying, even if it's not a relationship,
right?
Like,
yeah, just like that,
even period. Just in general, like, people see black women enjoying some shit and they gotta find a way to shit on it,
right?
It's crazy. Like, you know, some, you might not even be dating these women. You might not even be dating. You might, like, it's just something about how I find a way. And Beyonce was that for a long time.
Yes, she was.
For a lot of dudes. I think, and maybe she still is, but people are a little more quiet about it because her stepping so hard into, like, I'm black, motherfuckers, is, and I'm from Texas, and I be listening to rap, and I cuss. Like, to step into that, you see people totally different about how they come at her now than how it used to be, you know.
Agreed.
So but yeah, man, I don't know, man, I just love to see her do this, and that's what made me a fan. It was just like the self-titled album, I was like, oh god. Like, and what's funny is I think a lot of people are like, oh yeah, the self-titled album, because she was so, like, it was such a sex album, which I'm not knocking. Beyonce, of course, is beautiful, but that wasn't, it was more about just like, oh, this is the real, this is you,
right?
Like, this is you without, like, a manager being like, don't do that, or mm-hmm. your father being like, I don't know if we should, like, this is just you being like, no, I want to make this kind of music, I want to do these kind of things, I'm gonna talk about fucking me and my husband fucking in the back of this car, you need to roll up the partition if you don't want to see it. To which I don't know why the driver would roll up the partition, but okay. I don't know what kind of driver she got. Does you don't want to see Yancy on her knees? Yes, I do. Yes. Speak for yourself, ma'am. But yeah, but it's that kind of thing where it's like, to see her be able to step so fully into that. And I think it's with a lot of people, it's not just a Beyonce thing, but I think with a lot of people, that's how you find people that love you, quote unquote, without knowing you, but they love you because you love yourself. You love, like, because everybody wants to love themselves. Everybody's envious of being themselves, loving themselves, and unapologetically being themselves in front of everyone.
Right. And I think for a lot of people, particularly black women, just we've been kind of trained to be everybody but yourself. You know, be the mother, be the sister, be the friend, be the wife, be the girlfriend, be all these things to everybody else, but nobody a lot of times never asks you, what do you want to be and who are you? And I think for a lot of Black women, particularly when they, as their children get older and they leave the house, a lot of parents go through identity crisis, because particularly women, who am I? My life has been wrapped around everybody else, and for the first time I'm alone by myself, and I might not know who I am. I poured everything into my spouse or my mate or my significant other. Who am I? And so I think I've learned to love who I am and embrace who I am. And I've, particularly as I've gotten older, I've just gotten more comfortable in my skin. And I am who I am. You either like it or you don't. You know, I know I'm quirky. I know I can be weird. I know I can be bubbly. I know I can be energetic. You know, I know I know me. And I know that, my personality is a turnoff for a lot of people. But baby, you're gonna have to take this what it is. And I realized that a lot of times it's amazing that Black women being themselves is fucking revolutionary. It doesn't make sense. Why is it revolutionary for you to love yourself? Why is it revolutionary for you to embrace yourself? Why is it revolutionary for you to have demands like anybody else? But for some reason for us, it's like, oh my gosh, you broke out your shell. Oh my gosh, you're being bold. You're telling people what to do. Yes, 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 yes. And I think that it's a beautiful thing, when women do it and when they get to the place where they love themselves. It's because it's a lot of women, but I've talked to a lot of Black women that have very, very, very low self-esteem. This started off when they was children. Mm-hmm. And that shit is hard to course correct. It's hard to course correct loving your hair. It's hard to course correct loving your skin. It's hard to course correct loving your flaws. It's hard to correct those things when you've been told everything about you, there's something wrong. Make yourself small. Make yourself invisible. Make yourself not be seen and heard. You know, put everybody else before you. It's hard to get to the point where you put yourself first, because people become mad at you and jealous and upset and envious if you put yourself first. Because when you put yourself first, that means people are going to fall by the wayside. When you put yourself first, people that were using you and abusing you, and a lot of times people that saw a light in you, will begin to be mad and upset. I've come to the point where I'm like, but baby, you're just gonna have to be mad. You're just gonna have to be upset. Because if you're jealous of me being me, I'm not the one with the problem, you are. But because a lot of times Black women are taught not to have that confrontation because you're afraid of the angry Black woman syndrome, you know, just any type of confrontation is considered a bad thing or a negative thing. Even if we're not fussing or fighting or screaming or anything, it's considered a negative thing. So, but I've come to the point where, if you want to be free, conflict is a part of freedom. And that's very hard for people to understand. That in order for you to be free, for you to be really, really free, for you to truly love yourself, regardless of your flaws and your imperfections and how many children you've had, regardless of your past and how people feel about you, you know, you've got to get past that. And it's very hard for people, particularly if you have very timid personalities, or, you know, it's almost out of character to do that. And that's one thing that I really did love about Beyonce, and I really cannot express that enough, about seeing her in charge really did something. And something else, before we move on, she said that they did a whole rehearsal without music. Like, everybody was just there, you know, with their instruments and fully dressed, and they just did it. So all you heard was boof, 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 boof. And I was like, I couldn't even begin to just imagine the energy in there. And I think that that energy was what she wanted to capture and what she wanted to put and what she wanted to give us. That's why she was hard on people with the sound and all that type of stuff, because she was like, I want people to feel this love, this energy, this feeling that we have, this unity that we have here. And I'm so glad that she gave us a glimpse into her world so that we could see that part of her life. Because like you said, she don't do interviews. She's very separate. So for me, it meant the world and something else, and that really brought tears to my eyes. Cause there were several times where, for you know, I was sitting there and I wouldn't like, but I was crying because it was just like overwhelming just to kind of soak everything in all at once. Watching this black woman be free, do her thing, talking about she had a blank slate and she could literally do what she wanted to do. And it's a privilege to be able to just do what you want to do being black. You know, people don't want to hear that, but she's at a point in her life where she was like, y'all gonna have to deal. Most people are at a point in their life where they're like that. And it was just really wonderful to watch her kind of break those barriers and be like, if my country ass can get up here and do it, anybody can do it. And I hope it encourages people to get out and start things and do things and dream and have aspirations and things like that. And also I think for me too, it was when they was filming a documentary, when they was going through their rehearsals and watching people's responses to other people be magical, you know, like, and I almost felt like almost like a religious experience, because you know how we do. We hoot, we holler, we yell, we throw shoes, we're very loud, because that's just a part of what we do. And it was beautiful for her to show like the emotions on people's faces, the expressions on people's faces, to just us being black in the moments where we were just allowed to be free and black.
Yeah, and then of course she still had Destiny Child there.
Yes.
Still had Jay there.
And like you said,
still had Blue there.
Blue was now everything. And the thing about Destiny Child, it was flawless, where you were like, y'all literally could go on tour and people would buy tickets.
Yeah, there. They didn't miss a damn spot. Even like I said, they had Blue doing choreography with people for a second. It was just like a collage of that. And you know, it was funny because people say like, oh, I'm not, nobody's in the Beehive. If you ask everybody, nobody's in the Beehive, nobody wants to admit to, I'm not a stan, blah, blah, blah. And the only time we attribute somebody being a stan for Beyonce is when they do something completely uncalled for and crazy. Like, if they dock somebody, if they harass somebody, all of a sudden it's, you know, these Beehive stans. And, but that's not everybody. Mm-mm. If you black, you in the Beehive unless you a coon. And I know this because let somebody shit on Beyonce in front of you and see if you just let that shit slide. Most black people gonna be like, nah, hold up. You know, and the ones that had an impetus to join in, they some coons. Real talk. They just love white people shit that much that they want to be down. But like, that's one of those things where you have to step up and be like, nah, hold up. Why she got to catch hell in the way that these other people don't? Right? We got to be sensitive about Britney Spears' mental health.
Come on.
We got to be sensitive about like Adele and all the issues about her body.
Mm-hmm.
We got to be sensitive to everybody. But Beyonce, fuck out of my face, dog. We not doing this. So yeah, everybody in the Hive, dog. I watch your back, white people. You out here talking shit. You fuck around and get stung. You just do not know, man. Because, you know, you see some, it would be fine if the critiques around her were like more level-headed, but it's always some like low-key racist shit,
right? And it's ridiculous,
you know. I also loved how much she loved her post having baby body.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was like, oh, these hips now spread out, got little curves around this ass, like y'all about to get all this ass.
All of it.
Like, she was like oh, I don't know what to do with myself, y'all I can't wait to flaunt this on everybody. When Destiny Child was out there with her, she was like out there like booty shorts that everybody else had on, like pants or like tights. She was out there like, y'all gonna get this ass though.
All of it.
Like y'all seen these lactating breasts. I don't know if y'all know or heard about these things, but blood out, a little breast, bless you with a little something for everybody. I appreciated that. Yeah, and I did love the meeting part. I think the meeting stuff was just so dope because she wasn't being mean.
Mm-mm.
But you saw how demanding she was. And mm-hmm. And also it wasn't that shit that people do where I'm a diva, I can talk to you any way I want, and that's because I'm such a brilliant person and you're not. Like, it was still like this communal, like, we're a team, we're working on this together, but I am in charge, it is mine, my name's on this shit, I'm looking at this from every angle, I need this to pop, I need it to be good here, 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 and here. And when you see the final like product, Yeah, no shit. Like, she gets to get all that credit. Not, and she was more than magnanimous with the credit. Like, she's pulling people out on stage at the end, all that stuff, tagging people on Instagram. That's cool. She deserves all that credit for being the one to put it all together, because Lord knows that the show would have been a flop. Guess who would have took all the blame? Right.
Right. So. And also, the thing is, she also let us see that she's not lazy. Like, she's an extremely hardworking person.
As people, if, like, who needs to see that?
Right. People underestimate how hard she works. She basically was like, I had the dancers on one stage, the sound people on one stage, and the band and another stage. They was on three separate sets. And I went from set to set to set, practicing, rehearsing. Then I turn around and meet with 50 managers. Then I had to turn around and go home. Then I had to turn around and do it over again while I'm dealing with spasms and whatever else is happening in my body. You know, and that's a level of dedication that the average person could not do and would not do.
And, I mean, keep in mind, she still kind of is the nigga that got the job at McDonald's and is giving everybody, like, extra fries, because she put the shit on Netflix, which everybody got. So now, if you weren't up for the YouTube, you didn't catch one of them bootleg streams, you know your ass can't afford a ticket to Coachella. Mm-hmm. Most of us are not balling like that, or even lucky enough to be balling like that.
Right.
To then be like, well, then you can experience it in a way nobody else can experience it on Netflix. I'm gonna break it down. Like, that's the kind of bullshit that I really be hoping niggas can do. Like, well, you just don't see many black people even in a position to ever do something like this. And to see people try to have pot shots and resentment about it, then just be mad. As she said, oh, anyway, all right, Homecoming is amazing. Everybody should see it.
That album goes hard, because I played it and literally, if you're not careful, you literally just have a one person party. Like, because that shit, it goes from song to song to song to song to song to song. It's like boop, 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 boop. So before you know it, yes, you're having a one person party.
Yeah, it's dope. Good workout music, all that type
great
of stuff.
Great workout music.
All right, we talked about that a long time. I didn't plan a certain amount of time to talk about Mm-mm. it, but I did want to throw out one more thing. I also watched two parts of the four-part reconstruction documentary on PBS. I can't find the first two parts on PBS, but they are on YouTube, so I will be watching it there.
Okay, so it was four parts.
Yes.
Okay.
Skip Gates did it. It's really good.
It really is good. Very educational.
Reconstruction is one of those parts of history that most of us are not taught very much about. Mm-mm. We're kind of taught, like, slavery ended and then the Jim Crow South started.
Right.
And they skip over the 8 or 9 years where the South was essentially, forced to give black people their rights. And all the things that they did to circumvent giving black people those rights.
Come on.
It's really important that you listen to, that you watch this thing, that you educate yourself, because this is the shit they don't want you to know about. And a lot of the solutions that black people have to racism and oppression and the things that we get on each other for, they've been tried before.
Yes, they have.
Like in the 1800s, they have tried all this shit. And so, you know, hopefully people can learn to back off each other a little bit, but to see the bravery highlighted of certain people like Ida B. Wells, Frederick Douglass,
real MVP,
right? To see, like, you know, people talk about, like, Booker T. Washington and why his rhetoric was a certain way even when behind the scenes he was doing something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. Speaking of HBCUs, I mean, like, the founding of HBCUs, the education and importance and the subversiveness of HBCUs, a lot of that is because of Reconstruction. To see Jim Crow laws in the South, and not just the Jim Crow laws, Oh, by the way, you can also find all four parts on PBS.org for free. But not just the laws down south, but like before there were Jim Crow laws, the things that started, like one of the biggest like impacts and very hurtful to this day on our society was the demonization of black men as savage rapists.
Right.
So much of it historically has been used as propaganda against us. In Wilmington, North Carolina, there was honestly a insurrection that basically was a genocide of a black city. And it started with newspapers publishing false articles accusing black men of raping white women.
Yeah, these.
And it was all because they were jealous of the fact that there were black people that were going to be in government. So they went to the town, forced all of them to resign at gunpoint, and then started ransacking the town and killed black people in the streets as they fled.
Right.
I forget which river it was, but they were like, you know, the river ran red with blood, and then they took pictures afterwards smiling.
Yeah, it was near, I won't say it was near, it was at it a was beach. In, Wilmington?
It was in Wilmington.
Yeah,
I said
Wilmington.
That. Yeah, okay. I said it.
but my bad.
It's all good. Wilmington, North Carolina. And so they killed them and, took pictures in front of the burned out town buildings and government buildings and all that stuff, because they just didn't want black people to be in power of anything. And this is done multiple places, multiple times. And I always think about those pictures and how smiling those white people are. And those white people are somebody's grandparents, somebody's great, great, great grandparents, somebody, you know, that like all those people that was in my state, North Carolina, you know? So I guarantee you there's gotta be hundreds of these. This is not, you can name 12 probably. I don't know. Black Wall Street. Like, yeah.
And it happened all across the country. I don't know where people have this narrative that racism, quote unquote, only happens down south even to the day. Bitches, white people there, is racism there. What are we talking about?
Yeah. So this violence was so, so when you hear people talk about like black people just need to get our own, how come we be trying to get in with the white man? It's like, well, they kill people that try to get their own. They kill people that try to integrate. Mm-hmm. They kill people for minding their fucking business. They just killed people. Jealousy. At one point they were lynching black men and saying it's because these black men were looking at white women or sleeping with white women. And they just do it over and over all the time, right? They were so upset that they would no longer have these slaves. And now it's like, but all the black men coincidentally happen to be prominent business owners.
Come on.
So it's just, oh, just somehow these black people in these black towns, these black men that are doing a little too well, car a little too nice, clothes a little too spiffy, making a little too much money, somehow they're all rapists and need to die. But that's not our problem. That's everyone else. That's black people's problem. You know, they fucking burned down Ida B. Wells' printing press.
To the ground.
She had to flee Memphis. You know, like, and these facts are coming at you boom 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 boom, but it's contextualizing it with pictures, with actual, like, here's the article that says, like, you know, Negroism defunct, you know, after they destroyed a black town by killing all these people. And the fact that the newspaper knew that they were complicit in getting these people killed, you know, this is when we talk about whiteness, people think it's like an individual thing. No, we talk about whiteness, we're talking about whiteness TM en masse.
And yeah,
it has been so dangerous and deadly in this country, especially if you are black. It has affected you in some way. It's affected your ancestors in some way. It's why you'll never see me wear one of those fucking I'm not my ancestor shirts, because they were killing black people, and black people were fighting back, and they still killed them because there was more white people than black people, and they were the aggressors in these cases. So you know, to see this documentary, you know, on TV, it was so dope, because I do enjoy knowing these type of things, and I learned about different people. I didn't know about I forget his name, but the black man who was like a minstrel act, who essentially,
yes,
used the subversiveness of being a minstrel act to get black actors not wearing blackface, not being coons, onto Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Made a lot of money doing that.
It's called Two Real Coons or something like that.
Yes.
And by the time you show up, you don't realize it, or white people don't realize it, only one of them's actually wearing that coon makeup.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually just watching a play full of black people and this one dude. And he was like the highest black performer on Broadway ever and all this type of mm-hmm. stuff at the time. Like, just, you know, all that stuff, man. Ida B. Wells, the sacrifices she made, and just reporting about this stuff, the danger to her life that this was. So yeah, I hope people take the time out to watch it. Yeah, I think it was Burt Williams. I think that's who it was, Steven. I hope people take the time out to watch it. I watched it once, and then I've been watching it again just because it's so much stuff in there. Like, it's so packed, you can't really tweet it or anything. You just got to sit down and watch
right.
it, because everything is like, and then this shit happened, and then this happened. The World's Fair, where they didn't invite black people. They shipped black people in from Africa, but didn't invite any black African Americans to the fucking World's Fair. And that's when Frederick Douglass gave like his biggest like last speech that everybody remembers. Like, it's just, I don't know, it was just kind of really dope to see that. So I hope you guys check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, obviously, you know, it's all kinds of black trauma and shit in there, so if you can't handle it, I get it. But for those of y'all that can and don't want to be not informed, I mean, it's Skip Gates. He's basically giving you, like, this isn't about teasing your pain or trying to like make you feel bad or whatever. It's really educational,
right.
And it's also, like I said, for me personally, it always makes me feel less crazy.
Correct.
Like, I always feel like this is grounded in something. These feelings I feel on the soil of this country, it's coming from somewhere, and it's not just, you know, in my head. Like, there's a history to this, whether it's in my DNA or in my brain, or just passed down from my people, whatever. So and then the last thing I'll say before we move on to from this, it also made me think about something when people talk about respectability politics. There was a time, and in some instances it still kind of is, but people call it something different, but the whole respectability politics thing was revolutionary at a time. And I don't think people frame it in that context. They just frame it as like a negative towards it, like just respectability politics. But these people weren't stupid. They were looking for two things. Number one, you're living in a society that says black people can't. And by can't, I mean can't anything. We're not smart. We're not sophisticated. We don't have any class. We don't belong in white society. Right? And so a counter to that for a lot of black people at the time was, you know, like Ida B. Wells and Frederick Douglass, two motherfuckers y'all are not as woke as, that are not as brave as. So let's just chill with that before you start coming at folks. You had two people that they set out to photograph black people, you know, and this is like so back in the day, it's the photographs before people smiled at photographs,
right?
Like, it's the photographs you just look real still to the side, and then I guess it take 5 minutes before it's done or whatever,
you know, it in 24 hours probably to get it back,
right? But the pejorativeness that we say respectability politics with is one that is just it's a lack of context of history in which respectability politics was about literally getting respect. Now, sure, it's respect from racist people that are never going to give it, but at the time, this was not something that had even been tried before. And it was not just to gain assimilation, but to prove them wrong, to say, you say this thing, but you're not being honest. We have civilized government. We do wear these suits. We know how to do business. We are not savages. When the newspaper is making up rapes of women from black men, there is a impetus to be respectable, quote unquote, as a revolution to the status quo, to the lie that's being told about you. It's not so simple as just pull your pants up and you won't be killed. You know, it was, y'all don't wear pants. It's like, these, look at my finery, I do wear pants. And they're, and it's like, we will, you know, we wouldn't be so hard on y'all if y'all weren't this way. I still know that dude, I can't remember, his last name was Montgomery, the black dude that was a Democrat at the time. This is back when Democrats were the Republicans, the Republicans were the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And he spoke at like the Democratic National Convention, I believe. And essentially it was like, yeah, so black people don't deserve rights. We not as good as y'all. We're not as sophisticated as y'all. Y'all are better than us. We too savage. Blah. And like hurt black people's cause so badly. You know, and this is the shit they were fighting against. Mm-hmm. This is shit Frederick Douglass is fighting against. This is the shit that, like I said, Ida B. Wells is fighting against. Like, you have so many black people at the turn of the century, you know, Mary Church Terrell, like, you got people that are like, to us, we're like, oh, here's this, you know, many times it'd be like a more of a light skinned person and shit sometimes, cause that would allow them access to shit that, darker black people couldn't even gain, you right. know.
Come on.
But using that influence and using that privilege to then help the race and risking their lives doing so. You know, many of these people, if it wasn't for their ability to pass, sometimes they wouldn't even be fucking, we wouldn't know their names today. They'd just be dead.
Come on.
You know, but all of this stuff, all these strategies, Plessy versus Ferguson, that's a strategy. It's not, like, it's always said as if it's just like, when we learn about it in school, we always learn of it as like, yeah, it was just this incident that happened and then it led to segregation. It's like, it wasn't a coincidence. The same way Rosa Parks on that bus wasn't a coincidence.
Right.
So this is one of the reasons I like to read or listen and learn about this kind of shit, because I'm like, I'm always learning something I didn't know before. And it's always kind of giving me a different perspective, because from now on, I won't be talking about respectability politics in that kind of way. It's only a specific type that I think is makes people feel like, yo, this is fucked up. Right? Like, if black people weren't acting this way, everything would be fine. Obviously, that's fucked up, right? Like, duh. But when it's stuff like, you know, black people was wearing suits, like, yeah, because at the time we were told it was, you weren't supposed to be in that suit. That was the revolution at the time. You know, that was risking your life. Looking too good, having too much, you know, being too refined, wanting right. too much. That was risking your life. They were killing people for that shit. So that was the main thing I took away from this documentary, that was a different perspective than I walked in with. Was like, yeah, the catch-all that is respectability politics on Twitter and social, it's not really the catch-all that people think it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a little too loose of a definition, because I'll be goddamned if I'm gonna look Ida B. Wells in the eyes and be like, yeah, that respectability politics, sis. Like, nah. Mm-hmm. She was risking her life reporting on lynchings. She got driven out of Memphis at, you know, under threat of violence. Like, you know, let alone like all these black women that were being sexually assaulted, constricted labor, prison labor. You know, these type of things are basically just new versions of slavery, sharecropping, people making a mass exodus to the north to only be faced with redlining and more racism. Mm-hmm. We have tried everything. And I don't think we get enough credit for the ingenuity and the pressure and just the goddamn impossibility of white supremacy that we are up against, man. We are a little too hard on ourselves at times because we didn't quote unquote make it, as if the game ain't rigged on all of us.
Come on.
You know? So it's one of the times when I hear, when I hear stuff. Yeah, even without the internet. That's a good point, Jim. It's those times when I hear people like kind of come at like activists sometimes, or come at, people for trying something different or doing it a different way, and I always kind of go, yeah, but they trying something,
they doing something.
Like, it might not work, it might do, I mean, none of this shit has worked. I don't know if you noticed, none of us are really free. They can kill my black ass tonight. The police can just extrajudicial carriage of justice and just fucking kill me. And now it'll be on the news tonight as this nigga deserved to die somehow. Somebody just got killed in Charlotte. Like, none of us have gotten over that mountaintop yet, really, you know? And we made so much progress in this country, but it's because of that fight, that ingenuity, the ability to try other things, to never be, you know, to never let it be cordoned off and killed, you know? And the only thing that we really get left with out of it is like the hope for unity, for some kind of equality one day. So yeah, I hope everybody can be a little more gentle with each other and learn some history, man. If you don't already know this shit, mm-hmm. you know, learn it, and then maybe you'll be more gentle on people and less let me pounce on the next person that says the wrong thing or try something I wouldn't try, because that shit is just, I mean, it's been forever and it's human, but it's just so counterproductive. There's nothing really to gain from it. So anyway, no fucking with black people today.
Mm-mm.
Matter of fact, let's do some guest erase so we can get right into that. Wait, where's my guest erase music? Here we go.
Now that it's time for some guest erase. That's right, it's guest erase time. Now that it's time for some guest erase. That's right, it's guest erase time.
Ba-da-bop.
That's right, it's time for Guess the Race, the number one game show going across all the podcasts, man. We read and play news articles from all over the globe, and we ask our contestants today, Karen and the chat room, to guess the race. And of course, everyone playing is absolutely 100% racist. That's right, we the real racists. I think that's what if we started a different podcast or a new podcast, I think that's what I would call it, the real racist, instead of the blackout tips, because people already think we the real racist.
They do. We started, as far as they're concerned.
They already think we the real racist. So.
Reverse racism.
It's us, y'all, the real racist.
We're one is really oppressed. What y'all complaining about?
You've been looking for them. The Easter Bunny in downtown Orlando had a fight, and it was caught on camera. And so they caught up with the Easter Bunny.
Oh shit.
Yeah. And had him explain exactly why he put the hands.
So he was hiding more than them eggs.
I guess he was hiding more than them eggs. That's true, Karen. It sounds to me like maybe he had a hair trigger temper. But yeah, they caught up.
I guess he hippity hopped on that man.
Yeah. I don't know why he couldn't just bounce. But yeah, they caught up with the guy in the suit. His real name is Antoine McDonald. And interviewed him about why he did it. I think they actually had a video on here, if I can get it to play.
Okay.
Of course, there's an ad first, so let's give that the due time. AdamandEve.com, code TBGWT.
Mm-hmm.
Get your 10 free items. You love free stuff. Why would you not want it? Think about it. All right.
This fight happened in downtown Orlando.
Oh, did it pause?
And on your SAC Comedy Lab on...
Oh, so of course we have to wait for it to load behind the scenes too, apparently. I don't know what's going on, why it's freezing like this. But yeah, it was a fight. They caught it on video.
South Orange Avenue. News 6's Vanessa Ariza spoke to the guy inside the bunny outfit. One of the strangest pieces of video I've ever seen in my life. Vanessa, did he tell you why he got involved in this?
Yeah, Matt, he says he and his friends, they were out for a Sunday fun day here in downtown Orlando yesterday. It was Easter Sunday, so why not bring out the bunny outfit? He said he and his friends were bar hopping. They were going from one to the other when he actually saw a man here along the street. He said spit on a woman. He said he wasn't going to just stand Ooh. By and let that happen.
On Easter? Spitting on a woman? I would have been hopping mad myself. All right, Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to do that, guys. Back to this.
Downtown Orlando has seen a lot, but this may be a first.
The guy was just basically, I don't know if he was bullying her or what. So then I see him spit on her, and she starts hitting him and everything.
To get some laughs, Antoine McDonald and his friends took their traveling bunny suit downtown yesterday. They had just left one bar and were about to go into another when he says he saw everything unfold. He tells us he wasn't going in to continue the fight. Rather, he wanted to break it up.
I was just going in to break it up, but he kept hitting her. So then that's when I made it my problem to, you know, start, you know, hitting him as well.
An Orlando police officer was able to break up the fight. No one was arrested. McDonald and his friends continuing their night. But with thousands of people watching the video, he didn't even know it was taken.
Like I said, I didn't expect it to go that far. I was breaking up the fight.
And this bunny suit, you guys, is kind of like sisterhood of the traveling pants. Antoine McDonald, who you just heard there, said that everybody was wearing it that night, but it just so happened that he was in the costume when all of that went down. He said after all of that, he would do it all over again just to show that disrespecting anybody is unnecessary and will not be tolerated. So we want to learn more about Antoine McDonald. Who is this guy? We'll share with you where he's from, what he's all about, coming up tonight at 5 o'clock. But for now, live in downtown Orlando, Vanessa Ariza getting results, News 6.
Vanessa, I thought the story was going to get less weird after you explained it. I was wrong. We've posted the viral video on clickorlando.com. You can look inside the...
Only Orlando, Florida. Karen, guess the race of Antoine McDonald.
Oh, black.
All right, black. Let me check the chat room. Nobody was arrested, so as you guys can guess, the bunny costume was white. Antoine McDonald, Ronald's black cousin who wrote that freestyle rap, suit all moist, oh Florida. Okay, he's one of them. I got five on it. Jordan Peele nigga bunny, super bunny to the rescue. That nigga was hopping mad. We stand an ass kicking bunny who don't fuck with domestic violence. Nigga with a heart of gold, black Avenger, black Twan. Black as hell, black bunny king, hair re-situation black, as I said, black man bar hopping with white people and a white rabbit, super nigga bunny black man. All y'all went black, 100% of y'all went black, and all of y'all are right. Yeah, he was really hitting that dude too. It wasn't any rabbit punches.
I guess he gave a new meaning to the fur was flying.
Yeah. I'm surprised that he even carried all.
I see, that's what happened. That man messed with the wrong furry one.
What? It's not even a good pun, Karen.
I don't care.
Like he broke his rabbit foot off in his ass.
You know, furries? You know, people dress up in those outfits.
The wrong furry one? I don't get the fur. What does it mean, the wrong furry one?
Furry, you know how...
You know what? No, it's good. Here you go. It's good. I don't even know why I asked. That's on me. trying to get to the part of the video where they said that he is black. And they interview him like fresh out the suit. Like his hair was, it's funny because this clearly happens at night, but the interview is in the daytime. He still look like he just came out of that damn suit. Like, I don't know what's up with that.
He's probably been partying all night long.
Mm-hmm. Yep, so. Don't worry, guys. He did kill the man, but he was resurrected 3 days later, so it's fine. All right, let's go to the next one. A woman fends off a 300-pound half-naked burglary suspect with a baseball bat. It's like that, y'all. It's like that, y'all. I hit him with a baseball bat, y'all.
She was going for the home run.
No, see, that was good. Hold on.
She wasn't about to strike out.
Maybe he was trying to see if she was a single.
Oh, she's about to pop him with the double.
It's all in the news cycle. I'm surprised this didn't happen at Dennis.
Oh,
then she would have had a grand slam. Just kidding, I don't fuck with Denny's. All right, let's get to the news article.
Her window to see a large, police say 300-pound man pulling on a car door handle.
Wait, why did this start in the middle
early
of
early Sunday morning when Clarice Gainey said that she heard a noise outside her apartment. She peeked out her window to see a large, police say 300-pound man pulling on a car door handle and knocking on its window, attempting to break in, all while only wearing his boxers.
So I grabbed my back, I braced myself, I eased the door open.
That's when Gainey says 5'6", 300-pound Antonio Mosley charged her. Little did he know, she was a high school softball player, a 65-year-old slugger.
I took that bat and hit him upside a pie. He said, oh!
That's when police say Mosley ran to a nearby mobile home park, leaving behind his jeans, shirt, and a sock.
He was in his drawers. He didn't have no shoes on, no shirt, or nothing.
Police say a canine unit tracked Mosley down inside a mobile home with new pants on and cocaine in his pocket. Officers brought him back to Gainey to identify him.
I said, yeah. I said, that's him right there. They said, Miss Gainey, he got a big knot on his head.
Mosley was booked in the Alachua County Jail with two charges of burglary and drug possession.
If he better be glad I didn't have a gun, because I would have shot him. But this is my gun right here, because I'm going, paya!
Paya! Karen, guess the race of Miss Gainey.
I think this is the one I've seen on Facebook, so I'm going to recuse myself.
Okay, Karen recuses herself. Chat room, if y'all don't know, I guess the race.
Yeah, I asked them.
Ida B. Black saw this on Facebook, that a black nanas don't take no mess from pantsless fools. Pow. Black colored lick the shots off black granny. Madea's big knockout black. Antonio Mosley was on blow black. Granny hang a little heavy on the left handed side black. I have no words, black. Best greens in the hood, black. She definitely got a new hat for Resurrection Sunday, black, black. Yeah, you guys all knocked that one out of the park. She was black. I just realized I don't know how to show y'all the picture without showing the whole video. I don't know how to get it to go to the spot where it just showed her. But she's like, oh, there she is. Is that working?
Yeah, because they had the article. I think I'd seen this one because they had it going down Facebook and they had her with that bat. It was hilarious.
Yeah, so she whooped that ass, man. I don't know. He was fucking with the wrong one. They was like, yeah, he didn't know she was a softball player. I was like, he didn't know she had a bat.
We didn't see a picture, baby.
Right, don't worry about it. Okay. She black. Y'all, go Google it. Y'all seen it all. Last one, let's go to the bonus round. Double the points and the race. Double the points and the race. That's right, double the points, double the race, and the bonus round against the race so far. Karen is 2-for-2, or 1-and-1 recused. But going into the bonus round, she hasn't missed any. Let's see how she does in the double the points, double the race round.
Boom, 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 boom.
I think I'm gonna pause right here so we go to the next session and don't get cut off.
Okay.
All right, let's do this. Social media entrepreneur facing 20 years in jail for trying to muscle a domain name.
Oh shit.
An emerging entrepreneur, seemingly on the fast track for success, is now facing 20 years behind bars after he was convicted of threatening to harm an innocent domain holder for refusing to release the domain.
We couldn't just make something else up.
Rossi Loratio Adams II, 26 years old, of State Snaps, was found guilty of charges last week. According to the Justice Department, Stay Snaps features videos of women in thongs and bikinis partying it up in college. With 1.5 million viewers followers, Stay Snaps urges people to snap shots and post on the site to the catch under the catchphrase "Do it for State." According to the Washington Post, the incident began in June 2015 after Adams went to the Cedar Rapids home of the victim, listed in court filings as ED, to request that he sell the domain name doitforstate.com. Adams owned Do It For State, number four, but not the F-O-R. Mm-hmm. But he felt he needed the other name as well, so he found an address for ED through GoDaddy's listing and showed up uninvited to the domain owner's home. Once there, Adam informed ED that he wanted to buy the Do It For State domain, but ED said it was not for sale. From that point on, court documents say Adams continued to pressure ED to sell the site. At one point, ED said he would sell it for $20,000, but Adams thought that amount was too high. When Adams sent one of ED's friends a message with a gun emoji, prosecutors wrote in court. Oh, so then he sent one of the guy's friends who had the domain a message with a gun emoji. In May 2017, this is now like 2 years later, Adams went again to ED's house. When his brother answered the door, Adams simulated punching by punching his fist into his hand before stating, "I'm here for the name, whatever it takes. I'm not leaving without it." So he showed up like full force in house party. Mm-hmm. Still didn't get the domain name. Finally, in June 2017, a full 2 years after this started, Adams orchestrated an incident at ED's house that turned bloody over a fucking domain name. Adams enlisted the help of his cousin Sherman Hopkins Jr., a felon, to help him get the website domain. Adams is charged with giving Hopkins a stolen gun, a taser, and written instructions to get EJ, they put it in this one, okay, to transfer the domain name into Adams' GoDaddy account. Hopkins broke into ED's house using pantyhose, sunglasses, and a hat to obscure his face. Hopkins busted down ED's bedroom door and pulled ED at gunpoint to his computer to begin transferring the domain name, all while pistol whipping him and using the taser and threatening to further harm him if he notified police. The two men got into a tussle and ED twisted the gun from Hopkins and shot him several times in the chest before calling 911. Hopkins survived his injuries but was charged by police. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison last June after pleading guilty to one count of interference with commerce by threats of violence. Imagine, what are you in for? Trying to get a domain name. Like, do it for state. Now you doing a state bid, nigga. Like, what are you doing? Adams now faces the same sentence plus a $250,000 fine after he was convicted last week. Karen, guess the race of Rossi Larathio Adams II.
Everybody sounds white
to Karen. Let's check the chat room and see what you guys believe. Dude bro white, Q, what white nonsense is this meme? Only a white man can make virtual colonizer real life violent. White, when entitlement goes wrong, white.com on everything. Columbus as white, black, went three times, this some whiteness, 80s B movie, white. So it looks like everybody went with white on this one except for one person, and everybody is absolutely wrong. He's black.
What? I demand a recount. What's happening here?
And for the one person that got it right. You get the golf clap because nobody else saw that shit coming.
Mm-mm.
Mm-hmm.
Three times.
Larathio Adams II. I guess Larathio could have been a giveaway, but I thought it was like some Greek shit. Who knows? Over a domain name.
Domain name, dog.
Domain thugging. Roll up on that HTTP, bitch. You about to put that shit in my GoDaddy account. I know that much. If I put the chopper to your ass, man, that's a lot of pressure. Over domain name, fam.
Yes, we putting out the gats over domains now.
Pistol whipping them.
Right.
1.5 million followers ain't worth all that, fam. I'm sorry.
Mm-mm.
All right, let's get out of here with some sore ratchetness. A Brainerd man threatens victim with sword. According to the criminal complaint, Brainerd police are called at 1:22 p.m. February 16th to an apartment in Brainerd regarding a disturbance between known men. The victim stated Storstad had headbutted him. They never introduced Storstad before this. What is happening? Who wrote this? An officer talked.
That's what happened when you fire your editors.
An officer talked to the victim, who explained he was standing in the kitchen when he and Storstad got into an argument. Storstad then struck the victim's face with his forehead. Storstad then withdrew a sword from a sheath that was near the kitchen. The victim stated he put his cell phone in his pocket and walked toward the bathroom and shut the door. Storstad followed him with the sword, stating, "If you call the cops, I'll kill you." I mean, you got a sword, and I mean, it feels like I need to call them either way. I'm dying. While in the bathroom, the victim called the law enforcement, and Storstad immediately began to calm down. Storstad has multiple prior convictions, one for domestic violence in 2015, another for making terroristic threats in 2010. He was also charged January 28th with felony domestic assault. The trifecta. According to court records, this incident involved the same victim. When the two were physically fighting, the complaint states Storstad punched him multiple times in the head and also kicked him a few times. On February 20th, Storstad was released from the Crow Wing County Jail and must not leave the state. Possess any firearms or ammunition, have contact with the victim, possess any alcohol or drugs, and must make future court hearings. They didn't even say he couldn't have a sword. Did y'all notice that?
Right. Everything else, though.
Can't have a gun, but you can still have a sword.
Can't do drugs. He's in jail.
He's in your custody because of the sword. We don't take it seriously in this country.
No, we don't.
All right, guys, we'll be back Wednesday. We are doing our Game of Thrones recap with Jemele Hill. Tomorrow we may or may not have a show. We're gonna be a guest on another podcast, and depending on the timing of that depends on
right
whether or not we do a show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So until then, I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.